Hello everybody, and welcome to the Stormkeep. My name is Paul, and today we're going to be doing something a little bit different for this channel. I am bringing you guys a video battle report featuring the Stormcast beginner competitive list that we showed off in episodes number 48 and 49 and 47, I suppose, as well. I brought this list to a game with my friend Kyle, who was playing Slaanesh at the time, and I actually have Kyle on the podcast with me today. Kyle, say hello to everybody.
Hello. Thank you for having me on there, Paul. I'm your local Slaanesh worshipper that likes the pain of getting in a battle report with you.
Well, you're on for the inaugural one. I'm hoping to do more of these. I'm not entirely certain what format to take with these. This is kind of an experiment for us. So I'm looking for a lot of feedback on this one from people down in the YouTube comments and on Discord. So Kyle, tell the audience more about yourself. I guess, you know, how long have you been playing Warhammer? What kind of player would you consider yourself to be? Would you say you're more on the competitive side or on the casual side? And I guess anything else you want to let the audience know?
Yeah, of course. So myself, I've been playing Warhammer in general for about 5 or 6 years, but AOS specifically just got into about 2.5 years ago. It was a pretty casual start for myself, I have to say, but over the past year or so, I've started getting into the more casual competitive scene, mostly due to the fact that a lot of my buddies that we play with at the store there asked me to join their team with Gillow Gaming there, so I've been getting a lot of games in with them and doing some local competitions around Southern Ontario for the past year or so now. Slaanesh has been the army of choice for myself. I have not strayed at all from the Dark Prince, I have to say, in the 2.5 years I've been playing AOS. Obviously, the models were just absolutely gorgeous when all the mortal units came out there. So with that, they kind of ensnared me over to them right away. Obviously, when I started at about 2.5 years ago, Slaanesh was paying for the sins of the past. I never got to experience it, but I had heard Slaanesh had been quite powerful at one point. And as I said, when I got into it, they were not quite at that level. So with the new battle tone that they've gotten, it's been a big refresher for them, and having a lot of fun playing them right now.
Yeah, that first edition Slaanesh book was cracked. It was so incredibly strong. The hardest matchups I had in first and second edition were definitely against Slaanesh. It was a rough army.
That's what everyone had said. Like, the summoning was going off, the fight first effects were on a lot of things from what I heard, so it just seemed to be a completely different army at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the second edition book was very much this army needs to suffer for a while, you know, that's how we'll balance it. We'll swing it hard one way and then we'll swing it hard the other. And, you know, thankfully with the third edition book, they seem to have finally found something in the middle that's also pretty thematically appropriate for Slaanesh too, aside from all the shooting, which seems wrong, but...
Well, we've talked about how odd it is to run a almost a gun-lined Slaanesh army, but it is just that powerful with those bliss barbs there.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue into talking about our lists here. So taking a look at the list that you brought, if you want to break that down first, you call this the Glutos test list, because you're testing out Glutos to see if you want to bring them to GTs later this year, right?
Yeah, so Glutos really hasn't been on my radar with the previous Battle Tome, especially, and with the start of this Battle Tome, he wasn't really something I'd considered. Is that high points cost? At one point, I just didn't have the model, which, as you can see now, I'm still in the middle of building as per our slideshow here, but... with it, I really just wanted to see sort of those auras in effect with him, and my main sort of thinking with bringing Glutos is an anvil piece. One thing we've sort of suffered with Slaanesh is the lack of cheap screens that are effective in a sense, so it's been very hard to find anything that's actually working to take it on an enemy charge or anything like that, so I thought Glutos actually might be the perfect piece to actually do that for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
alongside that, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because your army doesn't really have anything like five vanquishers. Like, I don't care what happens to this unit; it's there to die, right? And Slaanesh doesn't really have anything like that. I guess 10 demonettes could kind of fit in that role, but it feels like everything in a Slaanesh army can't just be thrown away. Like, it has to get value before it dies. There's nothing truly disposable.
Yeah, I never find myself going into it with free points to sort of throw away into anything. It's always a really hard choice as to what I actually want to engage. It's very pick or choose, especially when it comes to getting into combat with units there. You really can't overcommit, so it really makes it hard to find effective screens or anything that you can sort of waste at any point. So Glutas, with his ability to heal himself and basically have that high armor save and cape up, and also just a large profile itself with the model, makes him sort of that great filler piece, not to mention that 12-inch aura on him, which comes into handy all the time.
So Glutas then would be the core of your list, and what did you think would be a good pairing to go with him? Pairing is actually... Oh, that's a good pun. Nice job, Paul.
I was going to say, if you can throw any culinary puns in there, I'm going to appreciate that with them. Well, oddly enough, I threw Sigvald in, which lore-wise, you know, does sort of make sense, but also they're not too fond of one another. But I've thrown him in this list as sort of, I was thinking, a countercharge, sort of a bit more fighty piece that would complement Glutas in this list. I was hoping Glutas might be able to weather some charges from especially any air Dracolings coming in and then hit you back with Sigvald. As we've seen, though, I find Sigvald can be a little bit swingy. So lately I've been less likely to use him, but in this list I thought he might work well for a combination there. The Lord of Pain, I'm using him a little bit less now with the points increases, but his buffing abilities when he's on an objective there, just that plus one to hit, plus one to wound, is just phenomenal. So I think it's really a great piece to be bringing in with you. And most lists I find I'm either bringing him or alternating him out with or just taking him out at that point and focusing a bit more on some troop choices. But if he's in the list, I think he's a great piece to have for buffing, especially your Bliss Barbs and your Twin Souls there. And finally, I think Contorted Epitome as the other hero. You always want a Contorted Epitome, I find, in a Slaanesh list. The rerollable casts, the overwhelming acquiescence, which is a plus one to wound 24 inches away on D3 enemy units, is just phenomenal. In this list, I did make the Contorted Epitome the general for myself, the warlord there, with the Strength of Godhood, Born of Damnation, and Crown of Dark Secrets for the artifact. Strength of Godhood being issuing a command, we'll give them plus one to the rend and plus one to the damage on the melee weapons. Born of Damnation to farm the depravity, and Crown of Dark Secrets, just a phenomenal artifact that I think when you're running Pretenders, you're pretty much bringing every time, which will, within 6 inches of a selected enemy unit, reduce their attacks profile to one. So with a list like yourself with a couple hammers there, I think it's a great piece to be having.
Oh, yeah. Especially the 6 evocators on Dracolines. Like, yeah, they'll still do a bunch of mortal wounds, but reducing all of their attacks down to one is really, really useful.
Yeah, and people, because the Contorted Epitome 2 shuts down the commands when they're within 3 inches as well. So it's a really great piece, a little bit squishy in combat, but a lot of people aren't really expecting the fact that you're going to shut down those commands, and if you're getting up close to something, reducing those attacks. So you can take an enemy out pretty quickly without them really expecting you to with that Contorted there.
A bit of a spoiler for this game, huh?
I wasn't alluding to anything.
I certainly wasn't expecting what the Epitome did here. Cool. Yeah, it's a solid list. Pretenders is really popular right now. Being able to issue, you know, redeploy, rally, inspiring presence to all 3 units of Bliss Barb Archers, that's great. Because you have a Lord of Pain, the all-out attack issuing isn't as useful because you could just keep a bunch of them near the Lord of Pain. So there's a little bit of inefficiency there. But yeah, Pretenders is strong, especially with tons and tons of shooting. Now, I don't think your list has that, like, that same volume of shooting that we've been seeing from other GT lists, which are like, bring 70 Bliss Barbs, you know, right before the nerf happened.
You know what? It's been something I've been running through my head about doing, is just the reinforcement. Honestly, I get it's one thing where there's not a high availability of the kits at the moment. And like we said, it just got nerfed. I'm kind of expecting them possibly to get nerfed again down the road. So I don't really want to start building all my lists just based off that at the moment. So
yeah, there's also the issue of battle tactics this season, right? Like if you just bring, let's say, 3 units of reinforced Bliss Barbs, like 60 Bliss Barbs, you're going to struggle with some battle tactics like surround and destroy. Intimidate the invaders gets tougher with larger footprint models. On this battle plan in particular, it was quite difficult for us to get our units out of our territory. That's not something you can readily do round one. So I think it's not necessarily the best way to play. Maybe just like MSU spam Bliss Barbs might be the way to go. Maybe not the reinforce thing. And when you do that, then the Lord of Pain could potentially be really good. But we'll see, I guess, how this season develops.
Yeah, and like I said, it's there's something that they're extremely efficient as a unit, the Bliss Barbs, so I can see why people do want to run them and as many of them as you can. But yeah, I did find it even hard with just the three units of Bliss Barbs to get some of those battle tactics later on. So see how the GHB plays out and see how efficient they become later on.
Sweet. Well, for my list, like I said, I was running the Stormcast Beginner Competitive list. This specific version of it was shown in episode 49 when we were talking about battle tactics. I built this list after a few test games in the season, and I quickly figured out how difficult it is to score battle tactics. So I whipped this version of the list together. It's pretty straightforward Stormcast goodness. You've got your Encanter, who's got a Dispel Scroll once per game, just guaranteed unbind. Battle Mage is in there to give a unit plus two run and charge, which combos very well with the Knight Relictor to translocate units 9 inches away. Then you have a plus two charge. This works very well with the Questor Soulsworn, who love to teleport themselves. So that's an independent teleport, which means your High Priest Knight Relictor can focus on other units teleporting around, like let's say the Long Strike Crossbows or just Vanquishers or Aether Wings or whatever you need. Filled out the list with some battle line choices, being Vanquishers, and a four block of Tempestors. I brought a reinforced block of Evocators on Dracolines because everybody at the store is doing it, so I thought I could do it too.
To my chagrin, I must say.
Yeah, and then I don't leave home without three Vanguard Raptors with Longstrike Crossbows. I feel like just having one unit is so pivotal to maintaining a board position right now, especially in this season. Everything is so spread out. Being able to just constantly pressure something is very useful. Like, no matter where you are on the board, the Vanguard Raptors are going to find a way to shoot you.
That's the thing. I can't stand going against the Vanguard Raptors because they are the bane of most of my units, I must say.
Yes, like, they are just slightly higher than your threat range.
That's the thing. You're always staying out of the threat range, and the Rend and the Mortal Wounds being my worst enemy when it comes to hitting my Bliss Barbs or my Twin Souls. Well, the Twin Souls, especially if they're out of combat. But yeah, no, I know how bad they can be, and I find it very hard to counter sometimes.
Mm-hmm. In terms of grand strategies, I went with Overshadow. My initial thoughts this season were that was going to be the easiest one for Stormcast to score because we like destroying units. It doesn't require destroying all battle line units, just ones in the starting army. So even if you play against something like zombies, spam, as long as you kill the initial units and keep one of your Vanquishers alive, you can still score it. And it's pretty easy to hide one unit of Vanquishers in the corner if you really need to. So that was my initial feeling with Overshadow. And you went with Selfish Desire, which requires summoning zero demons. So that's an interesting choice because I personally feel like anything that restricts your strategy in some ways is kind of a big opportunity cost. And like having the option to summon more demons, like that could win you the game. But then if the victory points you score off summoning demons counteracts the three victory points you just lost, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know. So what do you think about that grand strategy right now?
So that's actually a debate I was just having with Graham from the store as well there. We were talking about Selfish Desire and whether or not it's worth just automatically committing to those 3 points. And I ran actually another list recently where I was using the Arch Tempter grand strategy, which is tempt the same unit 6 times over the course of the battle. And reason I was trying that was actually to focus a little bit more on the feasibility of summoning. And it's just difficult to summon this battle tome, I find. Mm-hmm. The units you want to summon, like unit of three fiends, which is always a go-to, you're looking at 30 depravity now to summon in. And if you're playing against a savvy opponent, lately depravity farming has not been the way I've been going to play these games. So getting up to 30 just to summon a unit of three fiends, it's quite difficult, and I know it can come down to, you know, getting you clinching an objective at the end, but by the time you've got that depravity, you're looking at, I'm finding sometimes round 4 or 5 by you have that much depravity, and you're usually getting back maybe one objective. So at the most, I'm getting score 1, score more, or hold more, and getting two to three points out of that anyways with the summon. So I found it pretty much balances out to the same, whereas the Selfish Desire is just giving me that guaranteed three, and I don't have to worry about my opponent shutting down my temptations or getting that depravity in order to shut down my summoning later on. So regardless, it just goes off. So I found it's just consistently going to score me more points.
I see. It's the tactical limitation that kind of irks me. Have you considered running one of the seasonal ones, like a spellcasting savant? Because you'll usually be making your Contorted Epitome your general, and it's pretty easy to hide her in the back, right?
Yeah, that's something before this, running this test list here, where I hadn't looked quite enough into the grand strategies with the GHB. Looking at that now, it is something I would actually be going for, I think. Like you said, the Contorted, you pretty much are going to try to keep in the back, or not, at least not engaging too thoroughly. So I think you have a good chance of getting it off with her.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move past the list, and we'll talk about the battle plan we played, which was limited resources. So there's standard scoring on this one. You control one objective, you control two objectives, you control more objectives, and you get 2 points if you score a battle tactic that round. But what makes this battle plan interesting is that there's a few things. First off, there's 6 objectives, which we usually don't see battle plans with 6 objectives. We had a whole year almost without them. And they're spread apart in a very strange way. If you look at the distance from the bottom left corner to the top right, there's a huge gap between those objectives, right? Like, that's massive. And there's also the stipulation that you can't control an objective 2 turns in a row. If you do that, if you can only control them 2 turns in a row, after your second turn controlling that objective, it's gone for the rest of the game for you. You can still contest it, and you can still, you know, do things that require it being an objective, but you can't score it as in terms of, like, victory points. So this really punishes any kind of defensive style, which is really unfortunate for me. I love playing defensively. I love just, you know, riposting, you know, parrying and riposting. That's what I'm all about, is taking the hit at the right time and then have very efficient, you know, lunge to go for a killing blow. So that's very interesting for this. And also what's worth noting here is that this is kind of unusual this season. There are very large territories. Like, mostly this season is about, like, either quarter deployments, where you have your quarters are your territories, or you have, like, just the hammer and anvil style, you know, the top quarters are available, or sometimes even the flanks are open and you have this thing. But this, I think this is one of the biggest ones, has the highest amount of space to count as your territory, which is unusual. And that makes it really difficult to score battle tactics like intimidate the invaders and surround and destroy, which require leaving your territory. So in addition to it punishing castle defensive type play, it is very difficult to score these kinds of battle tactics. And because it's, you know, 18 inch away from enemy territory total, it's really difficult to deploy out of unbinding range, which makes things like magical dominance difficult to score. So this is a very strange battle plan this season. In previous seasons, this would have been actually pretty standard, right? Like, this was what we saw a lot of for the last year. But this season, this one's kind of an oddity. So my plan going into it was to not overcommit early, not try to take any more objectives than I needed to, and when possible, try to just give objectives to you. That way I can score them for the rest of the game. You know, like, because if you take control of an objective for me round 2, then rounds 3 and 4, I can score it, right? So that would be ideal, being able to score off it for at least 4 rounds in the game.
Yeah, that was one of the things I found I struggle a little bit with this battle plan, is getting a little too greedy, trying to get a couple too many objectives right off the bat there and limiting myself later on in the game. So you were great with allowing me to have objectives, as you said there, because it did come back to bite me later on.
I was a very gracious host. That's right. All right, well, let's take a look at the deployment we went with. I will also mention that we use the Florida Terrain Pack, which has a couple different rules from standard deployment. They're not too different, and I think they actually improve the game quite a lot. So I've been using it around the store where I play.
Big fan of them.
Yeah, everybody that I've played with is a big fan of it. It seems to just simplify a lot of the rules and also make some things a little more interesting. So if in case you haven't played with it, which I'm assuming is most people, the rules are quite straightforward. You'll see that there are some printed rectangles there, MDF cutouts. Those are just there to help standardize the shape of terrain, so it's more obvious, you know, how you get cover, how you get access to the mystical terrain rules. It just standardizes terrain shapes. You can see there's some other pieces there that are already flat cutouts, and those are simple enough to get cover. You can figure out which units are wholly within, which units are within an inch. It's just simpler, right? That's the first thing the terrain pack does. The second thing is that any piece of terrain over 2 inches is just counted as impassable. So that standardizes a lot of things, makes it really easy to understand, like, can I climb this tower and then stop my opponent from charging me? You just don't have those arguments anymore because it's very obvious. The other thing that happens is the defender gets to put down mysterious terrain tokens. Now, these tokens are things that a lot of players just ignore because you have to roll for them, and a lot of them are not very impactful. Like plus one bravery, who cares, right? That's not going to make a significant impact on the game. Deadly terrain usually does nothing, and even when it does something, it's not usually impactful. So, you know, people generally skip that because you have to keep track of it, you have to look up the rules. This terrain pack tries to fix that. It comes with these printed tokens, and these tokens have the rules for each of the mysterious terrain printed on it. So you can see in the photo here, in the bottom left, it says damned, and it'll tell you what the rule for damned is. You can ping a unit, take D3 mortal wounds, and you get plus one hit until your next hero phase. The defender, instead of rolling for each piece of terrain, they just place the tokens next to it, and that terrain has that rule. So in this case, I was the defender playing Stormcast, and I placed two arcane tokens down. You can see on my side of the table, which what ended up being my side of the table, there's two arcane tokens. There's a damn token in that terrain, and then there's also a mystical right there in the middle where the Aether Wings and Night Relictor are located. Then on the other side of the table, I placed another mystical, and another damned, and an inspiring. Then this terrain pack also gives you the option to declare two pieces of terrain as wildwoods, which means they block line of sight, and one piece of terrain as impassable. Now, I chose not to declare anything impassable, but I did make these centerpieces to be blocking line of sight. And my idea there was I could pick one side of the board to fight on, and then use the woods in order to block your bliss barbs from shooting at me. So I would go heavy on one side, force your bliss barbs to run through the woods, and probably at least one turn where you wouldn't be able to shoot me. And I think I succeeded in that goal eventually.
Yes, that worked very well for you, I have to say.
After the defender places all the tokens, the attacker chooses which side of the table they want. So even though I got to place a mystical and two arcane and a damned in my territory, Kyle, you had the choice of which side you wanted to take, which I think that's what people like the most about this terrain pack, is that the mystical terrain is in play, but there's no randomness involved. You get everything that you want, but then it adds like this little metagame of, okay, I want to make sure I don't put all the arcane in one side. I don't want to, you know, make one side of the table good and the other side bad, because then your opponent gets to pick which side of the table they want. So, yeah. Based on how I deployed things, Kyle, run me through why you chose the side of the table you did.
So, yeah, the side I went with was basically for the same reason that you put the Wildwoods in the location you did. I was hoping to sort of utilize that cover from your long strikes there, just to use the Wildwoods and hide the majority of my range units. The other thing, too, was I had a plan with the slick blades that you'll see over on the top left there. I wanted them to stay sort of out of range of the long strikes if possible, but also just visually sort of out of range of everything else as well. So I wanted them to stay as hidden as sort of a backup hammer or hitting you a little bit later on. As we'll see, I sort of jumped the gun with how I used them there. But yeah, the thinking was to pretty much block off your line of sight the same way you were thinking to block off mine from you.
So I put these arcane tokens down hoping to bait you into taking this side, because look how far apart, one on the far left, on the bottom left, and one in the bottom right. And I was hoping that I could bait you into putting your wizards near these, and then that would allow me to deploy a wizard out of unbinding range to score some battle tactics easily. But you didn't take the bait, unfortunately, which, you know, I wasn't really able to use arcane that much because I wanted a centralized kind of deployment. I didn't want to go too heavy on one side right off the start. I wanted to eventually transition into playing off one side. But yeah, I'm glad it's good you didn't take the bait, but it would have been nice for me if you did.
Yeah, no, like I said, those Wildwoods I seem to think are quite an important piece to consider as well. So that was my main thinking with mine. So I'm glad I didn't take you up on the trap there.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, here's some notes I made about deployment from my perspective, some key things that I was trying to make sure happened. So you had, we had the same number of drops. We both had 5 drops. And since you were the attacker, you got to decide, you deployed first. So I saw your full deployment before I had to finish mine. So that allowed me to put all my wizards down after all your wizards were down. It also allowed me to put all my shooting down after all of your shooting was down. Or all my hammers in general were able to come down after your shooting. And then I used this knowledge to make sure that my Dracolines were more than 30 inches out from all possible shooting, because I know that the total threat range of Blitzbarb archers is a 6-inch run on top of a 6-inch move, and then an 18-inch shot. So that's a total of 30 inches. So if I put my Dracolines 30.1 inches, they can't take damage from you round one. I know that there's nothing in your army that could possibly hit them. My long strikes, on the other hand, I wanted to make sure I had the option to use Thunderbolt Volley on my first turn in order to shoot your Blitzbarbs. So it was a very careful balancing act of making sure that I had all 3 of my long strikes within range of that one model in that unit. And that one model would be within 30 inches, and nothing else would be within 30. So that meant even if that unit ran its full distance straight forward, straight towards the long strikes, only one model would be able to shoot. And that would be, what, 2 shots on twos and threes, probably? And that might kill a long strike, and I'd be willing to take that risk, because I was very much under the assumption you were going to make me go first.
Yeah, no, I looking back on it, I wish I had let you go first. It was a little bit of fear, I want to say, from the Dracolines, because I had just faced James the day before, and you know how the Dracolines had really hit me bad there, so I was kind of all in on thinking about them at the moment, and I didn't really think about countering the long strikes as quickly. The other thing I found with the long strikes is they're always going to get in range of what they need to hit, as we've talked about. So it's very hard for me to get rid of them in that first turn, even with my range, if you're a savvy player like yourself who deploys out of range there. And I know they're going to hit whatever they need to on my end. So it's pretty much, I was hoping to bait you into maybe hitting the screens with the twin souls there. I'm hoping the Dracolines would get in afterwards into the range there. But yeah, no, it was just smart deployment on your end that really prevented me from being too efficient with that first turn.
Mm-hmm. Some other things worth pointing out here. Like I said, on this battle plan, it's hard to deploy out of 30 inches. So I was quite relieved when you put like your Glutos down, your Epitome, all your wizards not right at the front line. That allowed me this tiny amount of space that I needed right at the edge of my board to put a Knight and Cantor down and to put my Battle Mage down as well. The Battle Mage was deployed within 12 inches of the Questors, not wholly within. So the goal there was he could wild form them in a pinch and they could teleport anywhere they needed to. The Knight and Cantor I wanted out of unbinding range so that if you forced me to go first, which I really was expecting, that he would be able to cast spells out of unbinding range and score magical dominance. The Evocators, on the other hand, were purposefully deployed just outside of range of the Blitzbarbs, but within range in order to have at least some kind of unbinding potential on your Glutos, so that if you tried to score magical dominance, like if you decided to go first, that way I could at least have one unbind in range, and that would be enough risk to probably make you not cast your spell at all with Glutos. So that could kill an Arcane Bolt, it could kill Mystic Shield, like it's one spell gone automatically, right? Is there anything else about the deployment that we want to mention here? Oh, the long strikes. I also made sure to deploy them more than 30 inches from the unit on the right, and that was a bit of a challenge because of the way you position these units. So if you had deployed these Blitzbarbs further up, I think it would have been more beneficial to you because you did end up taking the first turn. And if you had known you were going to take the first turn, I think keeping your Blitzbarbs further up would have been the right play.
Yeah, I should have been a little bit more aggressive with the Blitzbarbs and a little bit more aggressive and just tried to take out the long strikes right off the bat with one of the units. Knowing full well you were probably going to get a round of shooting if I had failed to do so, shoot into them, I should have sort of committed a bit to a more aggressive push against them there, I think, looking mm-hmm. back on it.
Mm-hmm. In terms of reserve units, I put 2 squads of Vanquishers and 4 Tempestors in reserve. My thinking was that because the battle plan is so spread out, and I needed to be able to react, and you'd have to do the same. You'd have to move off your objectives. You couldn't just leave units back. Otherwise, I'd keep taking off Blitzbarbs with long strikes. This would create opportunities for me to just drop units onto objectives and onto board edges in order to score battle tactics. So actually, it's one of the problems with this list, because it brings the reinforced Dracolines and Questors and long strikes and Tempestors, it doesn't leave a lot of room for you know, like chaff, cheap units that I can just teleport around the board in order to score battle tactics. So unfortunately, that meant Vanquishers had to stay off the table. One of them I like dropping in front of my Tempestors when they drop into play, but the other one is there for tactical options. Anything else we want to say about deployment before we move on?
No, I'm good to go.
Okay, so round one, this is how the board looked at the end of the round. You ended up taking the first turn. You outdropped me. So run me through what you recall from your turn.
Yeah, turn one, we went with the battle tactic Depraved Unity, which is get on a uncontested objective with both and control an objective by the end of the turn with a mortal unit and a demon unit. Minimum one of each, but it doesn't matter how many are on afterwards. So I find as a battle tactic, that's a great one for Slaanesh players first turn. You can set up off the objective and just choose to walk on. If you're playing Godseekers as a sub-faction, it's fantastic too for that. But so that's a usually go-to battle tactic I would find first turn. The thinking here was to do a push forward. I wanted to get my archers into the wildwood there, sort of blocking off your long strikes from hitting them. The Glutos and the Twin Souls sort of pushing forward to cause that screen up front there, central of the board. I knew the evocators were going to be hitting me very soon, so I was either try to stay too far back and push delay the inevitable for one turn, or try to force you maybe into a Glutos Twin Souls charge with the combination reducing your attacks by one and then also reducing your hit rolls by one as well. So it's a great screening option for those two. So I was trying to bait you into charging there and hopefully counter back with the Bliss Barbs the next turn, be able to shoot you back, do a triple Unleash Hell or a double Unleash Hell in this case with the two units there if you charge further in. And then I also had, as I said, I pushed a little bit too hard with the Slick Blades there. So I had the idea of just getting them on the objective. And I think this was the turn where I got a little greedy and decided to just try to get that 10-inch charge, I believe it was, off on them at that point. So risking the charge was not the best case scenario for them there. And I did end up paying for it later on in your return here, actually. But I think I had a strong board presence taking over the center, a couple objectives there, and being able to weather your next turn I was hoping for and counter back with the Bliss Barbs later on. And I kept Sigvald back a little further too, both to zone you out in the back a little bit, but also to create a threat piece in case you decide to teleport anything down to take out those Bliss Barbs in the back or if the Evocators got a little too close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a fine plan. I think you made a couple mistakes here. One of them was I think you may have forgotten that you need line of sight to issue commands. So your plan with the double unleash, because your epitome can't see anything in that center piece of terrain, you weren't able to issue any commands to those units because the wildwood blocks the line of sight. And we're using, you know, wildwood as a term just to mean blocking line of sight. It doesn't work like a real wildwood, which requires the 3 inches or whatever. This is just if it passes over the terrain, it blocks line of sight. Nice and simple.
Yes, I was going to say, I do like that rule, but it definitely was something I had to keep reminding myself of in that game. Playing with this new terrain set was interesting because of that, because I was like, okay, normally I would be able to sort of function around this a little bit easier, but it just shuts down a lot more than you think it does. So it was fun to play with for sure, but it did catch me by surprise a couple times.
It takes a little bit of adjusting for sure, but once you can start using it to your advantage, it feels really good.
I'm loving playing with it and looking forward to using it further. But yeah, no, it does take a little bit of adjustment.
Mm-hmm. So looking at your turn one, because you chose to go first and my deployment was so on point, you actually didn't do any damage to me at the start at all.
No, it was nothing. I partially was hoping to just get some buffs off on Glutos as well so we could weather the next turn. So that was part of the reason I took first. But I was disappointed not being able to do as much, do anything at all. I said, not getting that charge off was pretty much the last point where I was like, okay, nothing's going to happen out of this turn in terms of offensive capabilities. But I think I thought maybe seizing the ground might have benefited me a little bit further there. But your deployment really countered well to everything I could throw at you.
It was also the case that your Glutos was down before I put any of my hammers down. right? Because just the way the drops ended up going, my Dracolines and my Long Strikes and my Tempestors are all in my Battle Regiment, which was the last thing I deployed, which was after you. So you didn't know where my Dracolines would be. If you did, your Galutos could have, you know, kind of gone in the way of them rather than deploying on the other side. Because you can see here, and I guess what's about to happen, is I'm just going to run around your Galutos. I'm going to ignore him and just run past him. Whereas if he was directly in my way, that's a lot tougher to do. So this is another thing that as a result of the deployment, because I was able to offset my hammer from your anvil, I can just ignore your anvil and run around it.
Yeah, this is part of the reason I was just trying to test out Glutos. I've realized, yeah, you just got to put him front and center. He's not a subtle piece whatsoever. Everyone knows where he's going to be, sort of thing. And yeah, I should have worked. I got to work a little bit better with using him as a set of central screen and planning a little bit around where you're most likely to put those hammers there. So
I guess people can't see it in this photo, but we had a little sticky note on that base that just said Glutos, just so we knew what was going on there. Okay, so this is how you finished your turn off, and I had taken a photo after I put a bunch of these range markers down, and I kind of tipped my hand because this was kind of like a discussion kind of game. It wasn't like the most cutthroat competitive game, so I tipped my hand a little bit and gave you my thought process based on the end of your turn. You did score, you know, a 5-point turn, which is a good thing to do if you're going first. You should try to score as much as possible. Another thing I think I should mention here is that there was... I think you picked up on this as a mistake. There was no reason for you to move your slick blades out on the flank there. You contested that objective, and that just means, you know, later it's going to be harder for you to score. Like, if you controlled that 2 turns in a row, if I didn't take it from you, it would be burned for the rest of the game after your next turn. And I don't know if that's the right play on this battle plan to control that many objectives that early.
No, it was just getting a little bit too overconfident in taking those objectives. And yeah, like you said, it's... If you in this battle plan, you want to reduce how much you're taking right off the bat. Don't get too greedy. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then my thinking as a response to your turn was to I did a few things. First off, I measured out all the distances where I can drop in with Tempestors, and I found that there was a spot that I could drop in. You can see where all the 9-inch markers meet. There is a 9-inch marker attached to a 3-inch marker next to Glutos. That's just to measure his -1 hit aura, because there's plenty of space for me to land 4 Tempestors and shoot at your unit of 11 Bliss Barbs there that are out of the woods, in the middle there. And I thought... I can score Draconith Destruction off that. 4 Tempestors shooting at 11 Bliss Barbs should kill them on average pretty much every time, even with all that defense active. So that was my plan, was I'm going to score Draconith Destruction. How do I do that? Right. I ended up dropping... Let's take a look at the next slide here. I ended up dropping the 4 Tempestors with 5 Vanquishers in front. I moved the Dracolines up first, obviously, in the movement phase, and that forced you to redeploy your Glutos back. Right. And that gave me more space to fit units without being in the -1 hit bubble, which was good for me. You also issued redeploy to the Twin Souls, although looking at it now, you probably shouldn't have been able to do that because they would have been out of line of sight. But that's fine. It didn't really affect the game too much.
I think it might have even made it better for you because you could throw those mortal wounds in afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I translocated the Aether Wings into the top right corner. And then I immediately issued Thunderbolt Volley, and I hit that unit of Bliss Barbs that was poking out from behind the rock on the right side. And I think I took them down to 1 or 2 remaining models, and you were able to inspire and then rally them back throughout the whole game, which is a very annoying thing to happen.
That's what the Pretender specialty is with the Bliss Barbs.
Once your Glutos used redeploy, I knew that my Questers could move up and your Slick Blades wouldn't be able to redeploy, so I moved them up 5 inches in order to get a 5-inch charge after casting Wild Form on them. And this was the end of my movement. I had prepared to charge in with Dracolines against your Twin Souls and then pile in towards your Bliss Barbs in order to finish off that second unit after I shot the first unit with my Tempestors. My Long Strikes then continued shooting at your screens on the right side. I believe the Twin Souls there on the objective, I shot them off. And we can see how that ended up. So when I charged the Dracolines in, your Glutos actually used Unleash Hell because you were able to see me around the corner of the woods there. And he swung high and he just killed a whole Dracoline with his belch or burp or whatever he does, whatever shooting attack he has.
It's actually it's the one thing that he has. It's the demon staff that he's got, you know, that's the thing that's making him eat so much. It just, I think it shoots, it's out of its eyes or something, out of a mirror or something like that. Very Slaaneshy. But anyways, yeah, when it does hit, it's 6 damage flat.
Yep.
Tears and tears to hit. No rend, unfortunately, but it's actually pulled off pretty clutch moves for me the past couple games, I have to say. An Arch Revenant fallen victim to it last game I played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that killed off one of the Dracolines, and because you had killed off a Dracoline, and because I wanted to fight with the Questers first on the left side after they charged the Slick Blades, you were able to pile in with the Twin Souls and get some more damage on me, killing off another Dracoline. Since I got reduced down to 4, I wasn't able to fully wipe out the Bliss Barb unit. The Mortal Wound impact just wasn't high enough. And then that unit was allowed to retreat and then rally, as is tradition. Everything just does that.
As you do.
Yeah. Actually, no, I think that unit ended up being wiped out because you inspired the Bliss Barbs on the right side, and you weren't able to chain it. I think that's what happened.
Well, you know,
I
guess we'll see. We wouldn't have been able to expand the inspired into the Wildwood anyways. Same thing off the contorted,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it would have been on the one unit who I had hid behind the rocks there, with hopes to take out those Aether Wings, I think, the next turn. So
yeah. So I had obviously tipped my hand with the Evocators here. I put them right center in the middle of the board in range of all of your remaining hammers. But I think I had done enough damage that even if you had the next turn, top of round 2, that it would have been okay. Your Slick Blade ended up running away. It was destroyed. You were down to a handful of Bliss Barb archers. All you really had left was Glutos, the Epitome, and Sigvald. And I had everything in my army except for 2 Evocators. So I felt pretty good about this position. I was able to score Draconith Destruction, score 1, score 2, score more. So I tied up the game at 5-5. The one thing I kind of regret not getting off, I believe you denied my Mystic Shield here, which would have made a big difference in how comfortable I felt putting my Dracolines out there. But knowing how fragile they are, it really, you know, I just had to commit. You know, you put your guys right in the middle of the board. I had to pounce on that. So let's take a look at round 2. You won the dice roll, and you opted to go first. You charged Sigvald in against the Dracolines and wiped them all out except for 1. You rallied back a lot of Bliss Barbs on the right side, as you can see. That unit, I think, had 2 or 3 models at the start of the turn, and it rallied a lot. And your Glutos charged in to my Vanquishers, or into the Dracolines. It killed a bunch of the Dracolines alongside Sigvald, and then my Vanquishers were able to pile in and tie you down so that you weren't able to retreat or redeploy. Your Epitome made a bomb charge, 12-inch charge, into my long strikes and wiped them out. So that was a mistake on my part, because I recall thinking at the end of round 1, or in the movement phase, should I drop my Vanquishers in just in case something gets past my lines? And I thought, you know, the Twin Souls are going to die. There's only going to be 2 heroes left. Like, I'm not too worried about 2 heroes. And I completely forgotten just how reliable the Epitome is in combat, like against weaker hammers. So I ended up losing my long strikes because of that mistake. You were able to charge in, kill the long strikes, and take the objective from me, which, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was probably the best piece that could have been in that position as well. Shutting down the commands when you're within 3 with horrible fascinations, fantastic. So I wasn't getting any of that unleashed hell that was going to come into me. Even if you did, she's got the 2-up mortal wound ignore, so she's a great piece to be thrown into the long strikes, and with strength of godhood, she can mince a unit pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Now, this positioning for the Epitome turned out to be quite a problem for you, because the Wildwood on my side of the board prevented you from issuing any commands to any other units, and you weren't able to get strength of godhood off for the rest of the game. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world that could have happened, and this is one of the reasons I'm really glad that I bring like 4 hammer units, right? I have the Dracolines, Tempestors, Questers, and Long Strikes. That way, even if my opponent is able to destroy one of them, well, I've still got 3 of them left on the table. So you were able to score 5 victory points here. You scored Death by 1,000 Cuts by hitting the Dracolines with Sigvald, with Glutos, and with the Bliss Barbs. And then, another max 10-point turn. Is there anything else we want to say about your round 2 here?
And this one, there's no, like I said, the contorted pretty much really helped me stay in the game, I would say, at this point, because he had those long strikes in. I think it would have been definitely almost game over by end of year round 2 there. Those questors hit a lot harder than I expected them to, and that was
They are a great unit. We're very, very hot on them on this channel.
Oh yeah, very fantastic. But no, at this point, I was feeling a lot better than I had been, having those Evocators down and having the long strikes out. I was thinking if I could just Whether the return with the Tempesters there, and if those Questers maybe fail to charge or something along those lines, I'd stay in a little bit longer. So I was feeling pretty hopeful at this point. One mistake on my end was, again, taking a battle tactic, Death by a Thousand Cuts, that should have been left for a little bit later on. It's pretty easy to achieve, especially when you have a big hammer unit like Tempesters or Questers. I could have hit you later on with that and maybe went for something a little bit easier. At this point, though, I was struggling to even do some of the battle tactics out of the GHB. So it was a tough toss-up as to what I wanted to do here. But looking back, I think I regretted with that battle tactic choice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for the record, the third unit that did Death by a Thousand Cuts was the Bliss Barbs that survived the previous turn. They shot at the Dracolines that were in their face rather than retreating, which was the right move, because it scored you the battle tactic. But because they stayed in combat, my one remaining Dracoline was able to kill them and fail his mortal wounds into Sigvald.
Yeah, I mean, that was lucky for me on the mortal wounds, but yeah, I was sacrificing them for the battle tactic at that point.
Mm-hmm. All right, so in response to that, I declared this was a tough choice for me because based on how few units you had left on the table, I knew that, and then based on my positioning, I knew there was no easy battle tactic for me to do. I couldn't reliably do Intimidate the Invaders because my Vanquishers were stuck in combat, and I wasn't able to get all my units out. If I tried to do Intimidate the Invaders here, I'd be stuck fighting your Bliss Barbs in the top right corner with my Questers, which would allow your Epitome just free reign to go and murder all my other heroes. So I knew the Questers had to come back home with a teleport, with Wild Form and a 7-inch rerollable charge, and they're Wizard Finders, so they got plus one attack against the Epitome, which just, yeah, that worked out perfectly. She died very quickly. I first cast Geminids to make sure that your Epitome and Glutos couldn't receive commands this turn. Then I shot at Glutos with the Tempesters. I charged in and attacked him, dropped Vanquishers on the top side in order to just set up for Surround and Destroy the following turn, and tried to just pump as much damage into Glutos as possible. Now, I did make one key mistake here. I retreated my Vanquishers. I should have just left them in combat and piled in towards Sigvald, and tried to lock him into combat for a turn, because what you could have done next turn is to charge your Sigvald into my remaining Dracoline, which I had retreated in order to rally back. Because as James knows, you always rally back one Dracoline per turn. It just happens every game, every time. So I made kind of a mistake there. I should have kept Sigvald locked in combat. I knew that the Dracoline was safe in the woods from the Bliss Barb archers because he couldn't be seen through the wild woods, and Glutos wasn't in range to pile in against me. So I was totally safe. Unfortunately, or I guess for you, unfortunately, you didn't capitalize on that, and you went a different direction. But anyway, my turn, yeah, I scored one, scored two, scored more. I got the battle tactic. I got a full point turn, leaving you with only Sigvald, Glutos, Lord of Pain, and six Bliss Barbs on the table.
Yeah, no, it was definitely feeling the heat at this point. I was picking and choosing very carefully what I wanted to do, but as you alluded to, I did make a little bit of a mistake coming up with my next turn there with where I should have put to Sigvald.
Hmm. Well, let's take a look at what your turn was. Unfortunately, I didn't get a photo of it, but it was pretty straightforward. Your Glutos stayed in combat with the Tempesters. Sigvald charged in, and I think he killed one or two on his own. I think Glutos did a couple wounds, so his healing, he did heal a couple wounds. Bliss Barbs ran down and shot and failed, and then the Lord of Pain ran onto my objective. And I think that was it. At this point, you had burned two of your objectives because you were holding them two turns in a row. I think that's what happened here. And it's a little hard to remember. Everything was a little washy at that point in the game.
Yeah, no, I had burned two at this point because that was the issue with keeping my Bliss Barbs back, right? I had to sort of keep them back to get rid of your Aether Wings at one point with that one unit, where I should have tried to move them sort of forward and take the next objective there. So I'd already burned that back objective, which was a mistake. And
I don't know if you did, because I think I took it from you with the Aether Wings the previous turn. I think it was the middle right objective that you burned, so you weren't.
But the biggest mistake, as you said, was not charging into the last remaining Evocator with Sigvald there. I was hoping just to keep Glutos alive a little bit longer, because I knew if I had any chance of staying in for the next couple rounds, Glutos had to have a chance to get his recovery off in combat and have a chance to stay alive a little bit longer, because without him holding that line there, those Tempesters were just coming through, and it would be game over even quicker then. So that was my thinking, I think, with what I wanted to do with Sigvald there, but as you pointed out, I should have just went to wipe out that Evocator unit, because you brought him back pretty strong.
Oh, yeah, I rallied one on your turn, and then I rallied one on my turn as well. So they were back up to three models by the time it came around to me again.
And it's just such a unit that, like, if it's got three models in it, it's efficient enough, especially at this point in the game, to take out any one of my units. So just having it back at that strength was pretty much the nail in my coffin, I think.
Mm-hmm. You were able to dispel the Geminids in my turn, so I wasn't able to recast them, which was good. But after, like, in your turn, I think Lutos may have even died in your turn fighting my Tempesters. I don't recall, but I do know that by the end of my turn, he was dead, and I was fighting Sigvald. My Dracolines had charged in to kill your Lord of Pain, who, surprisingly, took a lot of damage and reflected a lot of mortal wounds. He killed a whole Dracoline with reflected mortal wounds.
That's what he does best at. Buffing everybody else is just getting hit and sending it back to you. I've never had much combat luck with him, but he takes a hit well.
For sure. And then my Questers charged in, killed the Bliss Barbs. At the end of this turn, all you had left was Sigvald, and he was in combat and unable to leave that combat. So I think you conceded at this point. But a hilarious thing happened here. I mentioned in round two that I tried to score magical dominance, and I did. Even though you had everything in range of unbinding, I just passed every spell. It was a total, like, Giga Chad moment. It felt really good. And then, of course, in this turn, I declare surround and destroy, trying to teleport my general onto an objective, because I've got mystical terrain and a reroll. So I failed a 2+ reroll translocate to fail the battle tactic, unfortunately.
If I hadn't seen it, I never would have believed it's possible.
So,
but I did see it.
You know, you score dominance, and then you fail a rerollable translocation. It happens.
That's going to be something.
So even though the score is tied at this point, the writing was on the wall, you would not be able to score any victory points for the remainder of the game, while I still had multiple objectives that I could still score, and multiple battle tactics as well. So we called it here, and I think this was a really good game. I had a good time. Really, the deployment did a lot for me here. I think you made a couple mistakes. I think the first mistake you made was going first. I think the better call was to let me go first. In a vacuum, it's hard to know exactly how it would play out, right? But I think in general, forcing a Stormcast player to go first is the right call, because the risk of a double turn from Long Strikes, Tempesters, and Dracolines is so brutal. It's probably not worth it. And
I would have given you the first looking back on it. I think part of the thinking was I was a little bit worried, because, as I said, I'd faced James before, and he had that first turn, as we came to call it, the cat scratch fever with the so I was still dealing with a little trauma from that game, I think, and was I gotta hit you first, but your deployment was just so counter to what I was trying to do there.
Mm-hmm. Well, unlike James's list, I don't run Lauchon with my Dracolines, so they have a pretty limited threat range. They don't have, like, table-wide threat range like James's list has. So it would have been a little bit different there. I would have just dropped in some shooting with some screens and peppered you, tried to kill one of your Bliss Barbs, and then it would have been a different game. But even when going first, I think you just overextended into the middle, not just with your Bliss Barb or your Slick Blade Seekers on the left side. I think moving all of your stuff down the middle of the board, putting it into charge range of my Dracolines, there was no reason for you to do that. I know you were worried about the Long Strikes shooting you, but think that the Long Strikes are going to shoot you. Like, you can't really do anything about that, because I can just translocate them into range. You just have to accept that you're going to lose the unit of Bliss Barbs every turn. But it's like, do you want to lose one unit, or do you want to lose all of them by moving up? You know, so a little bit more defensive play, I think, when you're going first is in order. I think you overplayed your hand, and you put yourself in charge range of my Dracolines, which I think is what cost you the game ultimately.
Yeah, once the offensive output of the Bliss Barbs is gone, and as we saw, you had most of my Bliss Barbs gone by end of your turn there, first turn, so... Yeah, it was an overextension with them. Trying to be a little too aggressive, hoping that the double unleash hell would happen as well. Kind of playing myself with the Wildwoods getting in the way there. Definitely didn't help do me any favors. But yeah, it was very clear to me early on I shouldn't have been pushed forward like I was there. And the twins and then Slick Blades, that's one that just really bugs me, because that was just poor planning on my part. There was no need, as you had said. I could have kept them back there with Sigvald and had a nice little... hammer to hit you back with when you engage me. So I overextended my hand, as you said.
Yeah. Still a great game overall. I'm really glad we played it out to the three rounds and it wasn't just like, oh, round one went poorly, so let's re-rack. Playing it out like this, I think, is a useful exercise. It'll teach you things that you wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Well, until you read that last sentence that says Slaanesh player concede. That looks pretty good to me. But yeah, no, I like it's fantastic playing games out like this. I have yet to beat you, but I'm working on that. But it's a learning experience each time. And yeah, I walk away with the game at least lasting a little bit longer, I'm finding now, and getting the points a little bit closer until you've tabled me.
Well, keep at it. Victory tastes sweetest when it's earned, right?
That's it. And I'm a Slaanesh player. I got to like the pain. That's the whole thing.
Speaking of which, during this game, how impactful did you find the depravity dice? Because that's something we hadn't really discussed. You were pinging me with it pretty much constantly.
It was good. You're, like I said, people who have played Slaanesh a little bit quickly learn how to kind of counter the standard use of your temptations dice there. I think I had one point where I hit you with it on maybe it was one of your Dracolines or maybe it was one of your heroes where I forced you to give me the depravity at that point. I think there was a point with our game that might have happened there.
Yeah, I think you finished at around 15 or 16, and that's because I just wanted to not dig D3 mortals on the Tempesters anymore.
Yeah, because it was limited. You were running out of models on a couple of units, like the Evocators too, hitting back. I must have hit them a couple times with the Temptations with my hits into them first, the shooting, and then whatnot. So I probably took off a couple mortal wounds with that. So I think just if you're hitting those high value units with the Temptations over and over again, they add up. And even though everyone doesn't typically give you the depravity points, the mortal wound usage can be great when you're really applying it constantly. So, I was pretty on it with this game, remembering to use it as much as possible. And getting up to 15 depravity isn't usually something I get around you. So
I usually finish the game with you being under double digits, let's say.
Yeah. Born of Damnation went off, I think, once or twice at least, and gave me a little bit. I think with the use of a primal dice, I got it off on one of those turns. So that had bumped me up, I think, 4 or 5 depravity by round two and around two for me, giving me a little bit of a boost. Then obviously U4 killers goes off. Can't really deny that there. And we were fighting pretty early on, so I was getting that. So.
Well, it was a great game, and hopefully this has been useful to people watching. I know people have been requesting us to do this sort of content, talk about lists and deployment and how you approach different battles. I think the question I get, you know, all the time on the channel is, how do I deploy? Right? That's such a broad question that it's like impossible to answer because it always depends on your list, your opponent's list, the battle plan, how they are using their units, what exactly you're worried about. Like, there's so many factors that go into deployment that really the only way to talk about it is through example. So hopefully this video has been a good step towards that and has answered some or given people some kind of illustration on what you need to keep on the board, watching out for specific threat ranges from units, and a few other things. So hopefully this has been a good video. Let me know what you guys think down in the comments. I'm very, very open to feedback on this one because if guys like this, then we can do more of this stuff in the future. Thank you, Kyle, very much for coming on and giving me your thoughts on this game. And hopefully I can have you on again soon.
No, thank you so much for having me on. Really big fan of listening to you guys and getting in games with you too, Paul. So no, glad we got a chance to do it. I do just want to shout out quickly my gaming club, Gillow Gaming. Check us out. We do a lot of Southern Ontario events and everything else. So if you see one of us there, just come and say hi. But thanks for having me on, Paul. Really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. Anytime, buddy. So thank you to all our viewers and especially our Patreon supporters. If you think we missed anything or our analysis in this video was lacking, please leave a comment down below. If you want to talk about AOS, then jump in the Stormkeep Discord server. We talk about Age of Sigmar all day, every day. We have a Battle Reports forum where I post more content like this video. So if you want to know more thoughts about random games that I'm playing or James is playing or anybody else in the community, can feel free to post there. You can post your models, you can ask for critique on them, or you can just show off how baller of a painter you are. We do community contests. I think our Stormdrake Guard contest just finished up, and there will be another one coming soon in September. And we do list building for all armies. I know that we have a lot of dedicated players for every army, not just Stormcast. Consider supporting the gang by becoming a member on YouTube or joining us at patreon.com/thestormkeep. For $5 a month, you can get early access to videos, you can get access to all the slides we use in these videos, and for a little bit more, you can get access to a private list workshop. So if you have a big GT coming up and you want some advice on how to get the last, you know, 5 or 10% squeezed out of your list to try to get the best chance of winning, you can get that from us. Coming up next on the podcast, we have a Season 3 Seraphon tier list update, we have Season 3 list building, and we've started working on our How to Counter Khorne video. All right, thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having me.